All right, let's do it. My name's Jeff Kay, and you're listening to episode 120 of the world-famous West Virginia Surf Report podcast. Recently, I was talking about technology and how it felt like I lived in two different worlds, where I have lived in two different worlds. When I was a kid in the 70s, that's a completely different world than in 2020, technologically speaking. I mean, we had the rotary phones and we had the, I went through the whole thing. Today, and it feels like everything, for the most part, has gotten better, I mean, it feels like cars, for instance. It feels like all the cars are good now. I know some people would argue with me on that, but it feels like all of them are good. And back in the 80s and 70s, in the 80s when I was driving, there was a lot of shit cars, all right? You get up to like 70,000 miles on it, they can start falling apart. You get up to 100,000, it's like, all right, we got to get rid of this thing. Thing has no value whatsoever. Thing has a value of $0 because it has 100,000 miles on it. Now people drive them for like 300,000, There's no way that you could argue that cars are not better. Oh, you might have a nostalgic, connection with those old cars. I'm talking about quality, reliability, So cars, no. TVs, are you serious? TVs, the things were like, back in the 70s, they were like a big piece of furniture. The thing was like, things like 5,000 pounds. Takes a forklift. I mean, if that thing went out, and they did all the time, they're always on the blink. I mean, these guys would have to come to your house and work on it, There's no way you can move that thing across town. It would take a flatbed truck. It'd take five men with, like a complicated, set of pulleys and levers and, so these guys, there'd be these guys that would like, that was their full-time job, TV repairmen. They'd come over and they'd work on your TV. And we had this Quasar. Yeah, now there's a brand for you. Quasar with the works in a drawer. You hip to this? I know you are. It had a drawer, like you could, I don't know how they accessed it, because we couldn't pull that shit out, I don't remember, but you could pull, like, this drawer out of the front of the TV, and all the innards were there, so you could work on the TV from the front instead of taking the back off of it and all this stuff. Oh, it was the latest cutting-edge technology. This thing weighed, like, hundreds of pounds, probably had, like, a 24-inch screen. I mean, I don't even know if it was that big. 19, maybe. Thing's huge. I mean, it's like a big wooden cabinet with a small screen, big giant tube in there. Those things are a piece of shit back in those days. They're always going out. I always had to call the TV repairman to come and look at it. And so nowadays, big old giant TVs are like perfect. They don't, we don't have any trouble with them. And if we do have trouble with them, just toss them in the trash, buy a new one. That's the way it works nowadays. I was talking about my grandfather coming back and seeing that Astain Bear. Is that what they're called? The Astain Bears commercial. Those Cottonelle guys always talking about, skid marks and whatnot. I was talking about how if my grandfather just popped in, who's been, by the way, he's been dead since 1975, but so if he just like appeared and watched that shit-stained bear commercial, how freaked out he would be. But he'd be freaked out even more? The size of the TV. He'd be like, holy shit, look at that. What is going on? He'd probably be hiding behind the couch. Why do you need such a, what, you know, it's like a 75-incher, you know. The guy's over there cowering behind the couch, and he was a brave man. So, I don't know. But anyway, so TV's definitely better. I mean, God, you know, 70s, those things, yeah. So those are definitely better. But I came up with one over the weekend that I think was better back then. I think this is quite rare, and I'm inviting you guys to tell me other things that were better back in the 70s than they are today. And the one I came up with, the toaster. The toaster in the 1970s, you just put two slices of bread in there, you push the lever down, the knob or whatever you want to call it, it pops up, perfection. Toasty perfection every time, without exception. You don't even have to think about it. It's not even something you need to think about, because you just, you know, when you first buy the thing, there's like two controls on it. Well, there's one control. It's like light to dark, and you just like change it to where you want it. Maybe you try it a couple times when you first get the thing. And then you get to the point where, yeah, that's the way I like it. Never change it again for the rest of your life. For decades, it never gets changed. And the thing just produces perfect slices of toast after perfect slices of toast for decades. And the thing's like a solid piece of equipment. Man, you could fire bullets into the side of this thing and it wouldn't, you know, they'd be bouncing off. Bread would be popping up, bullets flying. Oh, it's a beautiful thing. Nowadays, they're like super complicated. The slot is extremely too long. I mean, way too long. I mean, there's no need to do six slices of bread all at once. It's stupid. No, there's no need for that. If you can't wait, you know, do it two at a time. That's the way God intended. It's in the Bible. You know, two slices of bread at a time. That's the way it works. You don't need six. You don't need four. Just, you know. So there's like all these different, you know, complicated knobs on there. It's like, you know, you don't need all this. And it doesn't work. You got to stand there and like do the artificial pop-up. You got to do the mid pop-up, because you can't trust it to go all the way to the end. If you wait for that thing to pop up, there's a good chance that when it pops up, both slices of bread will be on fire. You know what I mean? It'll be like fully involved. Two slices of bread fully involved, flames shooting off of them, because it burns them up. I mean, even if you mess around with those the knobs on there, which you shouldn't have to do past the first week of owning it, which, you know, I'm always messing with mine because it never works. You know, and it's not just the current toaster that I have; it's other toasters prior. They're pieces of shit now. They're not any good. And we've had some expensive ones. I'm like, we got to put our money where our toast is. I mean, we bought some expensive ones. They're all pieces of shit. Like, none of them work. None of them work like they used to. I mean, you can't trust it. You got to do the mid pop-up to make sure the thing's not burning up. So anyway, that's one thing that I feel is better in the 70s than it is now. Let me know other things. You know, I think it's fairly rare. I think most things are better. And I'm talking about technology here. I'm not talking about people. Yeah, there's no fixing that. You know what I'm saying? I'm talking about technology. What was better? What technologically was better in the 70s than it is in 2020. Help me out. Help me come up with a few more. Toaster is my entry. All right. Today I was going to tell you the story about when I met Mickey Mantle when I was a kid. I saw this picture the other day on the internet of, I've seen it before, but it's a classic old photo, black and white, of Mickey, you know, walking off the playing field. And he's dejected, irritated, I guess. He probably, like, grounded out or something. Looks like he's coming from the first base area of the diamond. and he's flinging his batting helmet, just like flinging it off to the side, and his head, you know, his head's down, and he's walking back to the dugout. Great photo, fantastic. But in it, you can see the size of his massive forearms. I mean, this is like, I mean, the guy looks like Popeye or something. So when I was a kid, we lived in Charleston. Well, we lived in Dunbar, but it's right beside Charleston, West Virginia. We had in Charleston, there was a AAA baseball team called the Charleston Charlies, and they would have like ex-baseball players come up there sometimes. And, you know, try to draw people in. So these players, many of them were Hall of Famers. I mean, these are like baseball legends. I got to meet, because I live so close to a AAA baseball stadium in the 70s, I got to meet some of the biggest names in baseball, like historical figures, mythological heroes. And one of them was Mickey Mantle. I don't think this was even associated with the AAA team. He was doing an appearance at this department store in Charleston, this place called The Diamond, long gone. It was one of these gigantic, sprawling, elaborate department stores that used to be in every downtown city. And it was one of those places you walk through the door and you're like, wow, look at this place, you know? And the thing was like 7 or 8 stories. The thing had multiple restaurants in it. You could go in there and get a haircut. You could book a trip to Mexico. You know, you could, I don't know, there's all kinds, you could do anything in there. I mean, the thing was like this huge, massive building with all this, you know, shopping. What the hell is going on up there? Somebody just dropped like a bag of BBs on the floor. Oh, unbelievable. But anyway, so it was called The Diamond. Great old store. Gone. I don't know. Closed down in the 80s, I think. But anyway, he was doing an appearance there. I was a kid. It was like, I think I was like 13 at the time. So me, my friend Steve, and my brother took the bus up to Charleston to meet Mickey Mantle. Mickey Mantle. Legend. Like larger than life, right? So we took the bus up there, and we went to the Diamond. We were there way before he was supposed to appear. We were at the front of the line, up near the right in front of the table where he was supposed to sit and sign autographs. And we were there waiting, and the place eventually started filling up with people. And then this woman comes out and goes, "Well, I've got some bad news. Mickey will be here, but he's delayed. It's going to be several hours. So, you know, we apologize for this inconvenience, but he will be here." I don't know. It was like 3 or 4 or 5 hours later he was supposed to be there. She goes, "Feel free to come back, and we're sorry about this. It was out of our control," and all this stuff. So the place instantly, like, everybody just left, except us. We were like, what should we do? I don't want to give up this prime real estate right in front of the table where Mickey Mantle's going to be. And we were like, let's just stay. It's like, I don't know, it was like hours before he was supposed to be there. And we were like, let's just stay. So we're stupid. What do you want from us? So the woman came out and she goes, "Hey, you know, he's not even in West Virginia. You know, he's not, you know, you don't need to, you should guys go get something to eat or something. Come back." I said, "We don't want to give up our spot here." I said, "There's not going to be anybody here. You know, you know, you guys go get something to, you know, you don't need to stay." I said, "No, we're going to stay." She's like, "All right, whatever. You know, stupid, really stupid. But hey, yeah, that's your decision." So we waited there for hours and hours. Eventually, the place started filling up again. And eventually, Mickey Mantle walked in the room. He's wearing some hideous 70s sports coat. The thing was like blinding. It was hideous. And he walks in. He's got an entourage, of course. And he, you know, he walks into the room and he takes his coat off. And he hands it, I think, to that woman that was speaking to us. And he goes over and sits down. And the woman comes over and she goes, She goes, Mr. Mantle, I just want you to know that these three boys here, they've been here for hours waiting to meet you. We told them to, you know, go have lunch or something, but they wouldn't give up their spot in the front, you know. So I just wanted you to know that. Ha ha. Whoo. Anyway. And Mickey's just like sitting there, is like listening to her, no expression on his face, and doesn't even acknowledge her, you know. And she just scampers away eventually. And he turns to us and he's just like, so what do you want? It's like, what? Who? This guy was not nice. I wouldn't say he was openly hostile. I mean, he definitely wasn't hostile. He was rude. But, you know, he's like, what do you want? It's like, could you sign this baseball? The guy's like, oh, you know, the guy's a dick. Like, what the? We were waiting all day. The guy's a legend. It's like one of the, you know, the biggest names in the history of baseball. And he's not nice. Not nice to us at all. You know? Like, why? How much effort does it take to be nice? Especially to a, you know, a group of hillbilly children. I mean, these guys have been, you know, we were young. We were sitting there waiting for hours and hours and hours. And he knew about it because that woman tried to, you know, she was trying to be nice. He wasn't having it. Guy wasn't nice at all. Highly disappointed. You know, I don't understand why that has to be that way. But the thing I remember about that day was the size of his forearms. I can remember talking to Steve, like, afterward. I'm like, did you see the size of his arms? It's like something out of, like, I don't know, something out of Ripley's Believe It or Not or something. It's unbelievable, the size of his arms. And then I saw that picture the other day, and it reminded me of it. The thing about that is, okay, so he was a dick. Mick was a dick. And I met, like I said, I met all kinds of baseball players, legends, Hall of Famers, and most of them weren't very nice, you know? There were, I met Willie Mays, exactly like Mickey Mantle. Not nice. He was just there to, you know, for a contractual obligation, just to get that check, just like Mickey. Not, you know, not friendly. There's not an ounce of warmth, you know, nothing. And then there's, you know, other people like Pete Rose, not nice. He was, I mean, none of these people were just like openly hostile. None of them were, you know, abusive or anything. They just weren't, they weren't willing to put forth the effort to be friendly and warm, you know, none of them. And then there was, this one really hurt me. This one hurt me deep. Sparky Anderson, legendary manager of the Cincinnati Reds, big red machine. Not at all nice. Not at all friendly at all. You know, and then, but there were the nicest, there were three that jumped to mind that were friendly the way I wanted them to be. One of them was Bob Feller, great left-handed pitcher. Played for the Cleveland Indians, and he was he's a Hall of Famer. He was really super nice. Satchel Paige, legend of the Negro Leagues, pitcher. He pitched in the majors too, but I think he was in his 40s by the time he got to the majors. He was super nice, very cool. In fact, I think they had this thing where you could bat against him. I don't know how old he was at that point. 70 or something. I don't know. I don't even think he knew how old he was. I don't think he knew what his birthday was. But anyway, he was up there. I think you could pay like $5 and it would go to a charity or something and bat against him. Maybe it was Bob Feller, but I think it was Satchel Paige. How would you like to go up there and hit against Satchel Paige? God, be awesome. And Duke Snider, he was also super nice. The worst... All right, that's one end of the spectrum. Those were the nice ones. There's a whole bunch of people in the middle who weren't very friendly at all. Like Pete Rose and Sparky and Willie, all those guys. Not, you know, just literally there to complete a contractual obligation. And screw you hillbilly children. You know, you people, you know, you're just lucky to be in the presence. I mean, that's the air. That was the air of them, you know, the air surrounding them. But on the worst of them all, on the other end of the spectrum, the worst of them all Hank Aaron. He was up there. He was at the Charlie's. He was at a Charlie's game, and he was hostile to us and people. People were up there trying to get his autograph, and he's like, "Leave me alone!" You know, it's like, "What the hell? What is it? I mean, what is the point of you being here?" You know, I don't understand. I mean, generally they come in there and they sign autographs, you know, begrudgingly, whatever. He was like, "I'm not signing anything," you know. And he was like sitting down there watching the game, and this woman rolls this kid up in a wheelchair, you know. And she's like, "Mr. Aaron, I'm sorry to interrupt, but, you know, would you mind signing this poster for Billy over here?" It was like that kid from Teddy Bear. I think it was Teddy Bear. And he's like his two crippled feet, you know. And he's like, "Why so many interruptions?" You know, he wouldn't even sign it. Or maybe he signed it, but he was like yelling at her. I was like, "What the hell?" And he was smoking cigarettes. He was down there like sucking down cigs left and right. You know, I was like, "What the? This is no good." So after that woman with the with Teddy Bear in the wheelchair, he's like, "I've had it." You know, so he goes upstairs, and he's up on he's sitting on top of the press box in a like a lawn chair, sitting up there smoking. He's sitting up there with this shitty look on his face, smoking. You know, they call him Hammerin' Hank. You know why he was hammering that day? That's right, Paul Malls. I don't know. He was the worst. He was by far the worst. He's like yelling at people. And I think his brother was like the manager of the opposing team, and he was like fully invested in the game, and he resented it being interrupted. Whatever. You know Tommy Aaron? Are you familiar with Tommy Aaron? That was his brother. Anyway, I mean, what the hell? God. So he was the worst. So a lot of those guys were disappointments. Except for Bob Feller, Duke Snyder, and the great Satchel Paige. Those were the only ones that I can remember right off the top of my head being super nice. Rest of them were, not good. And at the other end of the spectrum, Henry Aaron. Dick. All right, but anyway, so that's my story about Mickey Mantle. I still have the autograph ball. It's sitting here in the office, sitting here in the bunker. One thing you can say about Mickey, he does a beautiful autograph. Man, that thing is beautiful. You know, that thing is really good. It's from, I looked it up on the internet. You can find anything on the internet. I think it was July 28th, 1976. That was the day he was at the Diamond in Charleston. Found this when I was looking for that date. I found this other article where it was some sports writer, and he was like talking about the three times that Mickey Mantle came to Charleston, West Virginia, and it was not flattering. Said he was not nice the entire time. You know, he said this one guy was taking, he was from the newspaper, and he was taking photos of him. And he goes, "Mr. Mantle, I just want you to know what a great honor it is to be able to take your photos." And he goes, "Just get done with it and get the fuck out." You know, that kind of thing. Just said that one time he got off an airplane up there in Charleston. The general manager of the Charlies met him there, and he's like, "You know, welcome to Charleston, Mr. Mantle." He goes, "Can you get me a woman for the evening?" That was the first thing he said. Guy's like, "Not really my area of expertise. I don't know. If somebody ever asked me to get them a woman, I quote, get them a woman, you know, for the evening, I don't know where, you know, I don't know how I wouldn't have no idea, you know." But anyway, he was notorious. He was drunk all the time. God, unbelievable. But anyway, that's my story about the Mick. I have his autograph. I love it. It's a treasured memento. I wish he'd have been friendlier to us. But anyway, that's that. Speaking of Teddy Bear, I have a call that came into the hotline. You can call too if you want to be a part of the show. About like the one I'm getting, like my good friend Eugene, who called a couple days ago. in response to my I was talking about Red Sabine, who recorded the CB radio hit Teddy Bear in a recent episode. If you want to be a part of the show like him, you can. 570-290-8151 is the number. Call it night and day. You can get all liquored up, you know, have a few pops, give me a call. That's fine, whatever how you want to do it. 570-290-8151 is the number. It's just a voicemail system, so if you want to do it, do it. And Eugene, I worked with Eugene at Peaches Records and Tapes in Greensboro, the legendary Peaches Records and Tape. Known him for many years, great guy. He has a podcast called Wheeler's Dog. He'll talk about it in this message here. But anyway, he called talk about Teddy Bear, which is a song recorded by Red Sabine, who is related to me, or I'm related to him, ever how you want to look at it. Oh, he's long dead, Red Sabine. But he was a country music star. He was a member of the Grand Ole Opry. He had a bunch of hits in the 60s. Well, he had some hits in the 60s. And then he jumped full force, both feet, ironically, into CB radio, that whole CB radio craze. He had some hits during that CB radio craze in the 70s. The biggest one was called Teddy Bear. And here's Eugene discussing that wonderful song.
Hey, Jeff K., this is Eugene, your old Peaches buddy, and the guy that has another podcast. I'm going to plug it if that's okay. It's the Wheeler's Dog Podcast. Wheeler's Dog Podcast. And I just listened to the last one where you told everyone about Red Sabine. And, you know, I remember back in the day, the song, believe it or not, I had to look it up because I remember it being on even pop radio stations. And I'm talking about Teddy Bear. And I had to look it up, and sure enough, it just cracked the top 40. It peaked at 40 on the Billboard Hot 100 singles chart. So I remember hearing it all the time on the radio. And my dad, you know, he loved it. You know, he was into the CB culture and all that. And I thought it was hysterical because, you know, I'm a sick little shit, or I was, and still am. But as a little kid, I thought it was hilarious. And my dad's like, I don't see what's so funny about this crippled little kid whose father's dead. And the one thing that would make me just laugh my ass off is when he says, you better believe I took my turn riding Teddy Bear. Because my little 9-year-old brain was taking it dirty. And it sounded really dirty to me. And by the way, someone else did it. Did a cover of it. It's, I got to look it up right now. It's very bizarre. You can trim this down. Gosh, someone else did it. Singer Diana Williams. And I want to say somebody like the OJs did it. I can't remember. Let's see. Oh, I should have been more prepared for this. But anyway, I'm very sorry. And it's a very weird R&B version of it. So, yeah, I can't find it now. But, the Jackson Southern Airs. It's a black gospel group. They did it. And just bizarre. A friend of mine turned me on to it. So I was in the right part. J's. Wasn't OJ's, but the Jackson Southern Airs. But anyway, Jeff, I just thought I'd share that because my sick little mind enjoyed it. I loved having it tagged on the end of the podcast. I was actually driving down the highway listening to that on I-40. So, again, thanks, and Wheeler's Dog Podcast.
Thanks, man. I had no idea that there's an R&B version of Teddy Bear. I definitely need to check that out. Yeah, so your dad was into the CB radio stuff. Yeah, I don't know. I talked about it last time. I never got into that, but you know, I liked all the music, like Convoy by that great artist C.W. McCall, you know. I think he's in the Rock and Roll. I'm pretty sure he's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I'm not sure. C.W. McCall, Convoy. But anyway, Eugene, thank you for the message and thank you for the story. That's great. It was, you know, riding teddy bear and all that stuff. That's questionable. But anyway, thank you for that. Eugene, as I mentioned, was a I met him at the Great Peaches Records, and he did many years in radio. He has a great podcast now called Wheeler's Dog, and you can get it, listen to it anywhere you listen to podcasts. Wherever you grab your podcast, it's there. So check it out. It's really good. It's similar to mine, you know, it's a similar approach. I don't want to say it's similar to mine because, you know, everybody has their own style, but it's talking about his personal, you know, stuff that happens in his life and aggravations and observations, very similar. And so that comes out, I think it comes out twice. I think there's a Patreon episode and just like we do here. So if you're interested, check it out. Wheeler's Dog Podcast, Eugene B. Sims is the proprietor there, and you should definitely check that out. Thanks for the call, Eugene. Always good to hear from you. So if you want to call in, like I said, 570-290-8151 is the number, or you can, what is the other ones? I don't remember. You can email us, yeah, surfreportpod@gmail.com. Yeah, those are the two main ways. So, yeah. Give us a call or shoot us an email if you have a question or something, you know, and you're too shy to call in. Shoot us an email. Also, if you want two of these a week instead of just a measly one, and I can think of no logical reason why you wouldn't. Why would you be happy with one episode when there's two available to you? Why? It makes no sense. Anyway. If you're interested in doubling down on these Surf Report podcasts, you can do it. You can head on over to patreon.com/Jeff K. That's Patreon, patreon.com/Jeff K. Sign up for a $4 or more monthly donation. They call it a patronage. I prefer donation. Whatever you want to call it means the same thing. And if in exchange, as my way of saying thank you for the monthly donation, I give you an extra episode every week. Not every once in a while, not every month. No, that's for suckers. This is every week, consistently. So the moment you sign up, the moment your first payment goes in, your first $4, you'll gain access to all of the previously recorded patron-only episodes. And there's a bunch of them. They go back all the way back to the Jeff K. Show. It's all there. It's all available. So there's a lot of hours and hours. It's not just 2 hours. You know, I don't say bunch of it. And then you gain access to all the new ones as I release them every week. So it costs $4. You put it on a credit card. Comes out the first of every month. You don't notice it because it's $4. And you get all this extra Surf Report action. So anyway, if you want to do that, do it today. Patreon.com/Jeff K. We're at the end of this thing. Hope you enjoyed it. I'll be back soon over on the Patreon side. Until then, you guys have yourselves a fine, fine day. I'll see you. Bye. Cottonelle guys always talking about, you know, skid marks and whatnot.